kick off. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to get in touch with us that way to talk New York Giants football. And obviously, with free agency now just a few weeks away, we're in the franchise period now. So there is some stuff going on. Not a ton of news quite yet around the NFL. There are some moves here and there. Nothing crazy, but Paul, this is the time when everything begins to ramp up as we get into the heat of the NFL offseason.
You know, John, and this is exactly why the mock drafts are kind of ridiculous at this point, because free agency comes first. And as we now know, in the last couple of days, there have been some veteran left tackles put out into the marketplace. Albert's from, of course, Miami. Jaguars getting rid of Beecham. So, you know, this ever-changing list of free agents will impact how teams look at their draft. Now, we talk all the time about teams that go best player available or teams that just look to fill holes. And then, of course, there are teams like the Giants who try to mesh the two into one equation. But the bottom line is you cannot disregard the impact of the changing free agent pool on what's going to happen in the next couple of months.
Now, the only thing you can do is almost bring out and publish top 30 or top 50 lists, where you rank the prospects simply based on how good they are, which therefore takes need out of the equation, because otherwise you're absolutely right. And look, we're not blaming the guys doing these mock drafts.
Well,
you know
they're
why?
Told to do it.
They're being forced to do it
and
by their
enemies. They're giving us something to talk about.
Absolutely. So, not their fault, but again, figuring out who's going to go where, because as much as it is a best player available type of league, Paul, need does impact things a bit from team to team based on what you're looking for, strength and weaknesses, guys on the roster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like you mentioned, that is impacted by what happens in free agency. Case in point, if Jason Pierre-Paul comes back, all of a sudden defensive end is a secondary or tertiary issue. If he doesn't, it becomes a primary issue when you come to free agency in the draft. So these type of things will impact teams' decision-making processes going forward.
Sure it does. And then the other thing you have to consider is the cap situation. We believe it's going to go up by about 10. Is that what they're talking about now?
Estimated.
Roughly. And once those cap numbers come in, and then, of course, again, you figure out how you're going to use that money in free agency, that will also impact some of what you're going to do in the draft. Because, look, for example, there are teams that probably have high-priced free agents right now that are saying to themselves, well, let's see, can we afford to devote that much money or that many resources to that spot and that player? Or do we think we're going to be able to draft somebody who's going to be cheaper and a blue-chip prospect and is going to help us save a chunk of money that we're then going to be able to spend in March? These are things that are being talked about now, which is why this week is now suddenly becoming a week where you see veterans getting cut.
Right, and teams are going to want to give some of the veterans that they have a lot of respect for a chance to maybe catch on with another team before free agency comes, which, frankly, is still fairly rare because NFL teams want to see what's available in free agency before they commit to a player at a position before you even get to that period coming up because they don't know who else is going to be available. Things of that nature. So I would still expect the signings of some of these guys that have been let go to be fairly limited over the
Agreed.
Next couple of weeks. I don't think a lot of that's going to happen. Here's the thing, and I say this pretty much every year. If I'm an NFL team, I don't want to go into the draft saying to myself, boy, I'm in really bad shape at position X, and I need to get my starter in the draft at that position. Because that's how you run yourself into mistakes. Because you know what? If you're picking at the 20th pick in the first round to throw out a random number, and you're in the draft and you're saying, boy, I need a starting defensive end. In some drafts, you're not going to have a starting defensive end at the 20th pick. And for people that play fantasy football, I know Paul hates it, and you know when you do a snake draft, it's the same type of concept, just so the folks out there can try to understand it. You might want to pick a really good running back, but if you're picking 10th in the draft, there's not going to be one left because they're going to get taken in the first five or six picks. And that can tend to happen in the NFL draft as well, which is why free agency is important to plug holes So then when you get to the draft, in my opinion, you can go out there and get the best player available, which might even be some repetition on what you have. Like Eli Apple. The Giants had Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Janoris Jenkins, but Eli Apple is the best player. You can never have enough corners. It still works. So to me, that's why free agency is important. You want to plug your holes, and then in the draft, you're drafting more for the future to me than you are for the present.
I think John was sitting here with me instead of Lance yesterday. I said exactly
the same
thing.
Oh, did you really?
Except for the free fantasy football part.
Well, yeah, I would.
Because you knew I'm not talking fantasy football. But yes, simply put, in a nutshell, you don't want to have desperate holes going into the draft. You want to minimize the desperate holes as much as you possibly can,
right,
because it will alter your draft strategy. Whether or not you want it to, it's going to have an impact in your thinking.
No question. All right, for you guys that joined us on Twitter, thanks so much. You can go to the Giants mobile app or Giants.com, and you can listen and watch the rest of the show there, where we're going to take your calls in just a second. Paul, you mentioned two of the tackles that did get let go, Kelvin Beachum by the Jaguars and Brandon Albert by the Miami Dolphins. Both those, Albert at least, had changed teams recently. Came over from the Chiefs, right, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And Beachum... both guys have been
Pittsburgh prior,
right? Both guys have been in the league. They moved around. Albert's on the older side. He's 32 years old. Both guys are not top tackles at this point in their career, but they are options and veteran options that could at least provide competition if a team would decide to go in that direction. But I think it's important to note, because as you know how fans get, as soon as a guy hits the open market, what are the first 18 tweets that you get? XXXX should sign XXXX. That's just how it works.
Yes.
You know, these are not, you know, what's the best way I could put it? Insert and play type of players where you hand the job to them. That's my point.
Well, to me, the only good thing about it is if you're a team that's looking for a tackle, you now have more veteran free agent tackles in the pool.
Oh, sure.
And maybe.
And never a bad thing.
No, because maybe that helps bring the price down. And maybe there's somebody else who has an eye on a tackle that you want, but now they like this new guy who just got cut more than you do. So maybe they're willing to move off of the guy you want to sign the guy who got cut today.
Hey, the more options, the more better. It's the simple economics of supply and demand.
Anyway, bottom line is teams who are in the market for a tackle, and this is a thin tackle draft at the top of the draft, okay? Many people have told me second, third, fourth round, you may be able to get a reliable prospect, but the blue chippers, few and far between. Even Robinson has a lot of knocks on him in terms of technique and his pass protection.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those who think he should be a guard.
And obviously, and Ramczyk has the injury with the hip, so there's a lot of guys.
The guy from Utah is the only one who seems to have a clean.
That's also a smaller school, too, so, you know, there are no – this is not your strong where you're going to have four or five offensive tackles picked in the first round and a couple in the top 10.
Absolutely not.
In fact, I don't think you're going to have one picked in the top 15, which in a draft is a pretty rare circumstance. You usually have at least one offensive tackle taken in the first 10 picks, a lot of times in the first five or six picks, to be quite honest with you. So, and this, Paul, is really – and this is something we'll talk about at the Combine a lot, I'm sure, as we talk to a lot of the guys that really study college football. But – this is something that's going to happen more and more now. As these guys that come out of college don't work with pro concepts on the offensive line with the way college football is played these days, and with the lack of contact allowed in NFL offseason programs in the spring and summer, it's hard to train these guys up very quickly. So
I agree with
that. I think this is the beginning of a trend where offensive linemen are going to become more valuable commodities because there will be fewer of them coming out of college that are ready to play.
I have no problem with that statement at all. And that's why these veteran tackles who are out on the market are certainly going to try to do what they can to get as much as they can on their deals. And at the same time, if you're a team looking for a tackle, you are going to be probably more inclined to look at those guys a little more closely than you might have otherwise, knowing that the first-round value at offensive tackle in this draft is just not there.
All right, I got a couple names here. This is an article by Greg Rosenthal.
Okay.
He lists 30 AFC players who could be released based on their salaries and numbers. This is AFC right now. I'll see if I can find the NFC, too. I'm going to roll through a few names. I'm not going to go through the whole list because I don't want to bore people to death. But real quick, here are some names that he has. Darrelle Revis. Team can save $9 million if they let go Revis this year, the Jets.
Well, and understand there are three reasons why a guy could be on this list.
Correct.
One is cap. Mm-hmm. Two is injury and age. Three is performance. Those are your top three reasons why a guy would show up here. Just understand that.
So Revis is one. Jamal Charles, another. They could save $6 million if they let him go. Again, he's coming off serious knee surgery. He couldn't even make it back last year when they thought he could. So that's obviously a huge red flag. Mario Williams could be somebody that could be let go once again. He's somebody that the Dolphins signed last year when they let go of Olivier Vernon. I'm sure they're looking themselves in the mirror saying, oops, I think we probably made a little bit of a mistake with that one. Elvis Dumervil, pass rusher, you can save $8 million on the cap if they let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Pac-Man Jones, Ray Maliuga, the linebacker. Russell Okung signed a very team-friendly contract last year. Apparently the Broncos have until March 8th to pick up a $19.5 million guaranteed option over the next 2 years.
That's
so,
a lot of bread. And by the way, you'll notice,
that's gonna happen.
What's the one common thread? A lot of injuries on this list, John, but what's the one other common thread? These guys are all a little long in the tooth, too.
Now, here's interesting. Here's a guy that I know you love, and I'm surprised he's on this list, but I'm going to give him to you, okay?
Okay.
DJ Fluker.
Is he really?
Who was a guy that you loved 4 years ago.
Loved him coming out.
Because he has an he's on his fifth-year option.
Yes.
Which is $8.8 million.
Okay.
And I guess maybe they think he has not played well enough to earn that money. And they've moved him into guard since
yes,
then,
they
too,
have.
By the way. He's
yes,
no
they
longer
have.
A tackle.
He was an underachiever, had trouble on the edge, mm-hmm. and they decided, you know what, they got to move him inside and try to make use of his strength in the power running game. At this point in his career, you might have to just admit that he is a guard, and he's just not suited to play tackle in the NFL.
And it's hard to pay a guard $8.8 million.
That's what I was just going to say. You can't do that.
No.
So he's going to be a cap casualty, if for no other reason, because his position does not merit that kind of money.
Right.
I liked him a ton coming out of school, but at this point I'm not so sure I like him as much.
And then a couple of potential surprise names he has here. Brandon Marshall as one, who is making $7.5 million next year if the Jets go full rebuild.
Right.
He has LeSean McCoy listed here, and he says it would be a huge surprise. He does not expect it, but he says it's possible. And then Jason McCourty, who's a cornerback for the Titans, has a big cap number, but he's really one of their better defensive backs. So I would be surprised by that, too. So, yeah, I only have AFC here. I guess I haven't set their NFC story out yet. But I thought those are some interesting names.
Names always. The question is how much production is left.
Right, and that's usually when these guys get let go.
You know, the one thing about the game, John, for the most part, not always, Bill Belichick does a great job of recycling guys. Let's not kid ourselves. But for the most part, these types of players have either a very limited shelf life left, or in a lot of cases, don't have really anything left at all. That's just the way it usually happens with those kinds of guys on that list. You got to be really fortunate, lucky, and just happen to catch the right guy at the right time to be able to milk some more juice out of him. I remember when the Giants signed three veteran offensive linemen. Only one was really long in the tooth. Lomas Brown, Glenn Parker, and Dusty Ziegler. Prior to the 2000 season, they rebuilt 3/5 of their offensive line in one shot, and they went to the Super Bowl that year. Lomas Brown had very little left. He played great in 2000, should have gone to the Pro Bowl. In 2001, he just went way downhill, and that was the end of him. Same thing with Glenn Parker. Was adequate that one season. The following season, 2001, way downhill. They had taken all the gas out of the tank, and there was just nothing left there. So you got to be real careful with these kinds of guys.
I will pass on mentioning the tweet that went around the world yesterday. I'm sure we'll get a call about it in regards to the Giants. I think you know what I'm talking about.
The running back.
Yes.
Yes.
The NFL.com did release a 4-round mock draft, which is insanity. But I'm just going to give you the names of the
four.
I'm just going to give you the names of the players that they mock to the Giants. It's insanity,
go
I know,
ahead.
But it's fodder.
Go ahead.
You'll like the first one, O.J. Howard in round number one.
Yeah, he's a quality player. I'm not necessarily sure I like that pick, but he's a quality player.
Round number two, Dwayne Smoot, defensive end,
yeah.
Illinois.
Yeah.
Round three, quality Davis player. Webb, quarterback, California.
You know what? If he gets to the third round, again, we've talked about the Giants might wind up thinking about a QB at this point, so maybe that's not such a bad pick.
And then round four, Dan Skipper, offensive tackle from Arkansas.
I don't know him.
Neither do I.
At all. Don't know him at all. First three, I know something
And the only
about.
Thing I know about Webb is I watched him at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
And he was. I think he was the MVP of that game, if I'm not mistaken.
He has gotten some accolades and a guy who people think that should be looked at, you know, so. Well, I'll tell you this.
Just for fun.
They went. Tackle. They went defensive end. They went tight end, and they went future quarterback. You can't argue with the spots.
Agree. All right, here we go. Let's do it. 201-939-4513. Q in East Orange has been on hold the longest, so he will lead us off. Hi, Q.
How y'all guys doing? What's going on?
You sound a little tired today, Q. You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
All right, good.
it's been a minute since I've been able to talk to you guys. So,
no worries.
I wanted to talk about the fact of the Giants overspending for JPP. I hope that's not the case because we have other important positions we need to focus on the offensive line.
Well, Q, I would say this. I think you have to define what overspending is. I'm sure everyone thought they overspent on Olivier Vernon last year. How'd that work
exactly.
out?
Yeah, well, that's my point right there. I think as good as the season that Olivier Vernon had last season, he's still kind of overpaid by, I would say, by $6 million. But, of course, it's whatever it is, it's the market for the player.
Right, the market's the market. That's how it goes.
But what I'm hoping that we don't do is that I think JPP understands. He said he wants an Olivier Vernon similar kind of contract. I think he knows we can't give him that. So if that's what he's looking for, then we won't be able to sign him. And I hope we don't do anything stupid as far as franchising him because that's $17 million against $34 million that we already have.
The only thing I would warn you about, and I'm not trying to be a wise guy, but whatever guys say now going into negotiations are just that, part of negotiations. And why wouldn't a player say, I want to get this? I want you to pull a Brinks truck into my living room.
Yeah, but my point is that there are teams out there that will that probably if JPP hits the market, he's definitely going to get the money that he wants and probably more.
Yeah, Q, you know what, though? I don't think it's a guarantee that he'll get an offer on par with Vernon from last year. I think he'll get a very good offer that's worthy of his ability, but I don't think it's a guarantee it's going to go that high, and here's why. He's, for one, older than Olivier Vernon. He obviously has the issue with the hand. And aside from the hand, he's also had a few years where he's had some injuries. And he hasn't been able to finish seasons. And he's had off-season surgeries and things of that nature. So I think there are probably more, I'm curious to see if you agree, Paul, more red flags with JPP heading into free agency than there were with Vernon last season.
That is indisputable. That's indisputable. But I think the problem here is that
the market's not as good.
It's really, really weak.
Right. I think that's
really
fair.
Weak.
And this is overall to me. He's one of the most premier players on the market, period, regardless
of
position.
And that's why I said that. And
right.
That's what let me and that's believe fair. That he's going to get the money that he probably expected and more.
And
some
wait,
teams are real desperate. And
wait.
You know, pass rushes is like a
yes, yes.
It's something that every team needs. But I also wanted to talk about Flowers. You know, I just wanted to slide this in real fast, and then I'll get off the line. I wanted to talk about the fact that, you know, I know that we all understand that he probably can't be a left tackle. So I was wondering about, I know he's a first-round pick, so you can't just give up on him. Man, he's young. He's probably, 21? But it's a lot of things going on with him, you know, like the fact that he never talks to the media. He got into altercations with a couple of people, you know, in the media as far as, like, you know, and the fact that we lost an offensive lineman coach that – you know, he clashed with, you know, like, these are things that can't be ignored. And I don't want to add this to the equation. It really doesn't make sense, but it does. And I was, you know, I watch all the, I'm a diehard Giants fan. I everything Giants, 365, 24 hours a day, that to me. But I'm watching this guy on Instagram, and I'm looking. I'm like, you know, it's the off season. I'm like, oh, I want to see the pictures of him, you know, exercising and putting up, you know, showing that he's actually doing something off season. I'm seeing plates of food, sneaker pick, and him standing next to a building. I'm like, well, okay, well, he looks
standing
like he's not
next
doing
to a
it.
Building.
Now I know you can't. No, hold up. Now let me finish. I know you probably can't put any stock in that.
No,
but
I wouldn't.
You can't get some truth out of that. Because it's like I'm saying to myself, what is he doing? What he's supposed to do in the offseason to become a better player. So that's really all. I mean, I'm focused on it. But what I wanted to add into that is that I think I don't want him on the edges anymore. I don't want him at left tackle. I don't want him at right tackle. It was up to me. I would put him inside between a guard and a center where he has help. I think that's the best thing we can do for him. Because it's not like you could put him at right tackle and you think that. The teams aren't going to attack him. The teams are going to games, they're going to attack him. So he needs to be inside where he has extra help on both sides, you know, to help him for whatever. But he needs to work on his handwork. That's really what I wanted to say. And
absolutely.
Love the show. And, oh, one more thing. Please, we need to get a middle linebacker. Spagnuolo's defense is extra better. When you have, when we had like a good middle linebacker.
Thank you, Q.
I think that's what we need to focus on in the draft.
Appreciate it.
I love the show.
Thank you. I mean, I think Casillas and Keenan Robinson kind of split those duties on third down. I thought they did a pretty good job. We'll see if Kelvin Shepard's back. But frankly, I think the team's willing to give B.J. Goodson a real run at it as the middle linebacker on first and second downs.
They're certainly curious about him.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not they bring anybody else in to compete, I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, give him a run. Give him an opportunity, not hand him the job, obviously.
I mean, he was taken for a reason. I mean, they saw something in him. And I'll tell you one thing we know about him. He's tough, and he hits.
And that's his strength. His strength is a downhill, run-stopping middle linebacker. So if he's going to play, that's the role he's going to play in.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with giving him a chance. I really don't. I mean, I don't think you need to spend a lot of money, in other words, to go get a free agent. I think that Goodson deserves a chance. And if you want to tell me that you maybe draft another one to compete with him, I'm okay with that, too, later on in the draft.
Right.
I'm not going to take one high.
Yeah.
But I got no problem with throwing him into a competition. Your other thought, I just want to say this. I appreciate the fact that you want to see the kind of effort 12 months out of the year out of some players by looking on your web page or your screen and stuff.
Paul is an Instagram expert, by the way, just for the record.
But, yeah, exactly. Those of you who know me know that I have very little regard for social media. I don't really like how people use it as a news wire, so to speak. So he was making an observation, but also I liked his asterisk when he said, I know it doesn't mean anything. Bingo, it doesn't mean anything. So,
for example, do you see Eli Manning put anything up on social media about his workouts?
Not once.
Right. So I wouldn't put too much concern
yeah.
about
When's
that.
When's the last time you saw Eli taking a selfie while he's watching tape?
Right.
I don't think so. You've seen this?
No, I'm debating whether or not to make a joke about you from last night, but I'll pass on that.
Never mind. Let's go.
201-939-4513. Real quick, to follow up on Q, do you think Flowers, with his height at 6'7", and he's a tall, tall man, or 6'6", whatever he's listed at, can he be a guard?
I don't really like him there. It is my opinion that if you can get his consistency, his technique, and his relentlessness down, if you can get that squared away, I think all the things that are wrong with Flowers are things that can be fixed if he wants to fix them, if he wants to be eager about it. Because I think the skill set's there, John. He has the ability. He's got the boxcar frame. He's got the strength, the size,
he's got decent
the
feet.
Fitness.
He's got good feet.
Well, he doesn't use them as much as he should.
No, but he has the physical ability.
But he's got
ability.
Everything physically right. there. If you said to me, draw me up an offensive tackle in the National Football League, he absolutely qualifies.
Oh, yeah, no question.
Now, so it's the other stuff.
And again, there's a lot of guys in the history of the league who have all the height, weight, speed at positions and never make it. So
no doubt.
He's going to have to apply himself. And
he
Jerry Reese said
himself.
It this offseason. You know, he's going to have to prove that he deserves to be the left tackle this year. And it'll be interesting to see what type of competition there is for him to start at any one of the offensive line spots.
And I'm going to make this very plain and simple, folks. Over the years, the Giants have always talked about how they love their versatile guys. Okay, the Kevin Booths of the world.
Okay, David Deal.
The David Deals of the world. Okay, Justin Pughes of the world. And that is awesome. A guy may be versatile enough where even though he may not be a perfect fit at one spot, he can succeed in the National Football League at a different spot. That's absolutely possible. Deal was a left tackle on a Super Bowl champion. You know, Justin Pugh has played tackle and guard on now guard on a winning team. Kevin Booth played center on a team, you know, for some time that won some games and also played guard. So, you know, these things can be done. So I don't want to just sit here and say John and I are going to tell you he can't play guard. We're not going to do that. We're not going to tell you he can't play right tackle or he can't play whatever. We're not going to do that. But what we will say is we think he's got the tools to succeed at that spot in the NFL.
Well, frankly, because there's no way to know. I mean, he hasn't played right tackle since his freshman year in college. I don't know if he's ever played guard before.
I don't believe he's ever had.
Maybe in high school. Who the heck knows? I have no
idea.
So, you know, you look at the physical traits, and you try to make the determination the best you can, and you'll wait and find out.
Does it look like that square peg fits into the square hole? Does it look like it? But until you try it, you don't know.
Let's go to Oliver in Denver. I'm happy Oliver called back. We had him on the line last week, and we lost him. Oliver, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, good to talk to you guys. How you guys doing today?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, I can't complain. Ready for the off season.
Yes, sir.
I like you guys, the free agent list from the AFC. That's intriguing names like Brandon Albert on there. I was actually thinking about him because they drafted, Laramie Tunsil last year. Mm-hmm. I was wondering what they were going to do with Brandon Albert, but it looks like we already know.
Yes, we
so
do.
I called and asked you guys particularly about, I've been listening to some of the previous shows, and the Hankins versus JPP debate, probably likelihood we can't keep both. Which one do we keep? Which one's more important? Which one's replaceable? And I wanted you guys' opinion on interior pass rush versus outside pass rush. I know we got some young guys coming up that stepped up when JPP went down, but I think we still lack on that interior pass rush. And my question was, Snacks, did he really, like, mask some of Hankins' defaults of not being able to get to the passer? Because I think we had 35 sacks on the year. So my thinking is keep JPP. I know we're going to have to pay him a lot of money. We don't want to pay him Olivier Vernon money, but he's going to demand at least, you know, 12 to 15 million a year. Hankins, I think, is the guy that's replaceable. I would hate to lose him, but he's the guy that's replaceable. We may need to move more towards a true three technique versus like a run stuff and nose tackle, which Snacks already is. So what's your guys' opinion on that?
Oliver, I think you asked some great questions there. In general, I think interior pass rush is more valuable than exterior pass rush in a vacuum. Unfortunately, it's a lot harder to get interior pass rush because there's centers there that can help and things of that nature. So that's number one. Number two, when you look at the two players and you see the Hankins' role this year, remember, this was really his first time in the Giants system, Paul, playing that three technique spot. Yeah. He was really more of a one technique, played over center, played that one shade, or played in between the center and the guard his first couple years here. And he was the run stuffer. But once you get Damon Snacks Harrison here, he has to go play a little bit of a different spot. Understandable.
Yes.
Now, I would have liked to see probably a little bit more consistent pass rush from Hankins this year. He made some plays. He was back there from time to time. But I would have liked to see him back there a little bit more like he was 2 years ago when he had his 8-sack season, I think it was.
Seven and a half, two seasons ago.
So, yes, and I think when you're choosing between the two, and this is a question, Oliver, that Paul and I unfortunately can't answer now, it all depends on what the cost is for each guy and the value as opposed to the cap, because that will affect, you know, which guy you're able to bring back based on the position that you're in. And also, is it easier to, let's say you don't sign Hankins, is it easier to find a replacement for Hankins or is it easier to find a replacement for JPP? That's something else that you have to take in consideration. And at this point in the offseason, it's really hard to make those determinations.
You know, I would say this, it's a Rubik's Cube.
Because
there are so many angles to look at. If you simply look at the impact pass rusher off the edge compared to the guy on the interior, I think JPP is the more valuable guy on the open market. if you look at the Giants and you say, well, how hard was it for them to find interior guys over the years, especially now that they got Snacks and Hankins as a combo and they were really good stopping the run, how good did he make Snacks, too? Just because he was there on his shoulder.
Right,
good
right.
point. Good
you
point.
Know?
Good point.
You, how do you value that? How do you equate that? Then you say, okay, well, now what's the money that's going to be asked of? Then you say, okay, if this guy's gone, who do we have in-house and how are we going to replace him? I think the Giants have better caliber replacements at defensive end on the depth chart than they do with defensive tackle.
I agree with that.
So that's another angle to look at. There are. It's literally a Rubik's Cube. And I'll be honest with you, I've never solved the Rubik's Cube.
And I got to be honest with you, I do not, Oliver, envy the decisions and work Jerry Reese has to do this offseason, because he's going to have some really, really tough decisions
and
to make.
And why Jerry Reese gets paid a lot more than we do.
Yes. Come on.
But I would say this. I would say this. It is a tough problem to deal with. You prefer that you don't have two guys at the same position, in this case defensive line, who were so critical to your success, come up for deals at the same time.
Especially
that's tough.
The year after you gave out two big contracts
it's
in
tough.
The same position group to two other guys who were really, really good. So, I mean, all these things put together, Oliver, it is a really, really it's going to be a real balancing act for Jerry Reese over the next 4 weeks or so until you get into that free agency period.
It's very hard. I agree with you guys. It's like calculus. who do you think is better versus the run, Hankins or JPP? Who's more important? Because JPP is one of the best defensive ends in run stopping. I think he had like 75, 80 tackles the year before or so. And then he had that block and uncannable ability of blocking the pass. But Hankins also is good at versus the run. So I see that Hankins and Snacks, they're dominant versus the run, but so is JPP. And then you look at the Dallas game, Ezekiel Elliott, when JPP was out, had 100 yards. When JPP was in, he didn't. I love Hankins.
The problem with the question you're asking, and I don't want to interrupt you, but there is a very inherent problem in your question. It matters who you're going against. It's all about matchups. If you're going against a power between the tackles team, then obviously Hankins is going to be more important to your run stopping on that given Sunday. If you're going against a zone blocking team that's going to try to get outside the numbers,
those stretch plays,
then JPP is going to be more important.
Just
it's
one,
a hard question.
Just one number I'll give you, and you can take this for whatever it's worth. Tackles for loss, Hankins at 9 last year, JPP at 7. So if you want to take that into consideration, I'm not sure if that – I'm guessing that does not include the sacks, because obviously JPP had more than 7 sacks. So
and he missed 4 games.
Right, and he only played in 12 games. That's also true. Good point.
You know, this game has become so much more involved and dependent upon matchups than it ever was before. And so your question, again, is loaded. It's not a simple answer.
Oliver, great stuff, man. Thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you guys.
Thank you. And the problem I think you run into, Paul, is that the group was so good as a unit.
Yes.
So how do you break that down and figure out what impact a certain individual has in comparison to another one when it's the unit working together that made the group so good? It's really hard to tell. But I will say this. Let me just add this one thing.
Sure.
And I've said this to you before off the air. I'm not sure I've said it on the air. I don't think we saw a huge downgrade in how well the defensive line played in the 4 games where Jason Pierre-Paul wasn't on the field.
Yeah.
Now, I think
you and Lance have both said that.
We saw a impact in the playoff game against the Packers where maybe JPP could have gotten a little bit more pressure off the edge in that game than they did. He mentioned that first half against the Cowboys in the first game, JPP was out, and Ezekiel Elliott ran for, I think, 75 or 80 yards.
Yes.
But those are really the only two times where I sat there and said, boy, I think not having JPP in this game is really hurting the Giants. We never saw how they would be affected without Jonathan Hankins. He played all 16 games and the playoff game. So that's the only other thing I'll throw out there.
We did see that the year before, though. Correct. That wasn't good.
The year before, when JPP wasn't there, the pass rush was invisible, and guys were having cup of teas back there and, you know, making dinner while they're looking for receivers down the field. So,
and Hankins, too, had missed some time, and it didn't look good either.
Missed the final 10 games.
Yeah.
He only played 6 games, I think, 2 years ago,
that
right?
That wasn't good either.
Or 7 or 8, something like that. The bottom line is that you had to put all these different components into the cauldron, mix it up, and then, frankly, I know fans don't like to hear this, it's not going to be an exact science.
No.
You're going to make your decision. You're going to roll the dice. You're going to try to get as best odds as you can. It might work out. It might not.
You know,
it's tough.
I think the one thing that you want to keep in mind about both players, Jason's not the same guy he was, you know, 4 years ago where he was a dominant Pro Bowl player.
In 2011 when he had the whatever he had.
Is it that many years ago now?
That was his big sack year, yep.
You know, he may not be that player. But his experience has allowed him to play the run maybe as good this year as he's ever played, if not better.
Him and Vernon were both awesome against the run
this
year. Terrific.
And Jason also was very good at diagnosing those horizontal passes and knocking those suckers down.
By the way, it's funny. I was putting stats together for our combine shows, and I couldn't believe it when I looked at his passes defended. How many passes defended do you think JPP had this year?
I think
year?
He had 8.
He had 8. Do you know how many Olivier Vernon had?
2.
0. Do you know how many Jonathan Hankins had?
No, that I don't
0.
Know. Okay.
So those are 8 more pass plays that Jason Pierre-Paul impacted.
Thwarted. Not just impacted. Thwarted.
Correct. I like that word. Good job. That the other guys didn't. Now, it's not a sack. It doesn't have the same impact as, you know, making the quarterback lose 7 yards per se, but it's still an incomplete pass. It's a play that goes for 0 yards. So that's something else that you have to put into consideration.
And I'd like to ask you for another stat, John, which neither you nor I have access to. And I've often talked about this. And I, you know, maybe I should do a better job of trying to do diligence and keep it.
Yeah, yeah. You don't work hard enough. That's the problem.
How many hours in the day are there during the season? Right? penalties drawn.
You know what? That's a good point.
Nobody does that.
How many times do I remember JPP getting held this year?
Coaches
couple,
do
maybe?
That. Well, no. It's not just holds. It's full starts.
Hands to the face.
You know,
yeah.
Hands, how many penalties and yards are drawn by that defensive lineman or that outside linebacker because they've got that offensive lineman all jittery?
And, of course, the thing there is no stat for and nobody can keep track of it is the impact of the game plan. You know, how often does a tight end chip on that side or a running back chip on that side? But, again, there's no way to really quantify that.
The penalties drawn, I bet you the coaches are keeping
I'm sure they do have that.
But yes, I don't have anybody else who has, like, league-wide numbers on that so you can get a perspective
on
it.
You could probably go through the play-by-plays and track that for last year. They have the name of the – you know what players the positions are at and you know –
Yeah, but they're not always at the same position. You have to go back and watch it.
It wouldn't be 100% correct off the
play.
But
I deal with facts. I don't deal with anything that's less than 100%.
That would give you a trend at least.
I'd have to go back and look at every single snap. And then I'd have to do it for everyone else in the league, though, because otherwise the number doesn't mean anything in a vacuum. You know what I mean?
So here's what you need to do. You need to watch every NFL game this year and track all the stuff. Let's go to Drain Atlanta. He's up next. Hi, Dre. How are you?
What's going on, John? Hey, P-Dot.
Hey, Dre.
Hey, let me start off. John, you're killing me. I've been waiting patiently for inside the film.
Hey, Dre, I can barely hear you, man. Can you either get a little closer to the phone or speak up?
I think the battery went on his cell phone.
No, how about this?
There you go.
That's a lot better, Dre. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Right. I didn't hear you, Dre. What did you say?
I said you was killing me. I've been waiting patiently for that inside the film with Paul Perkins.
No, it's taped. It's in the can. I thought the Paul Perkins one went up. Did it, Matt?
Nope.
Well, trust me. It is on tape. It's there. Bob Papa did it with Carl Banks. So it will show up at some point. It is definitely done and completed. I promise it will be there within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay, but I'm gonna keep mine real short. What do you think about Miller, the Raiders running back that's free agent? What do you think about him interfering with Paul Perkins?
You mean Latavius Murray?
Yeah, Murray. Excuse me.
I think he's fine. I don't think you need to add Latavius Murray. I think Paul Perkins is fine. I think if you're gonna add somebody, to be a complement or compete with Perkins. I think you look at more of a strong power guy. I have to look at Latavius Murray's height and weight. I'm not sure exactly what it is offhand, to be honest with you. I have not watched a ton of Raiders football over the last couple of years. But, I mean, it's fine. He's 6'3", you know, he's 6'3", 230. So he actually is more of a power guy.
He is.
So,
but
yeah, I think he probably – I don't know what his demand's going to be. I don't think the Raiders are anxious to bring him back. I think they'll probably try to find a running back in the draft this year, in my opinion. I mean, he'd be okay. I wouldn't have a problem if they brought in Latavius Murray, but he doesn't get me excited.
My preference on the radar, if he's medically okay, is Eddie Lacy. Okay?
Right.
That's my preference on the veteran radar.
Right, but P-Dot, Eddie Lacy is the only Natron Means type running back that's actually either a free agent right now. He's the only really big body bruiser.
Actually, the other day I saw that he's interested in re-signing with the Packers, so it remains to be seen if he's going to be free. But that would be a guy I would investigate, and certainly Coach McAdoo knows everything there is to know about
Eddie
Lacy.
He has not been very impressive the last couple of years either.
Well, he's been hurt.
He's had his weight issues and all that stuff.
Earlier in his career he did.
Yeah, well,
still young enough,
as early as 2 years ago, I mean. And they say he put a lot of that weight back on during the course of the year, too. So
still young enough.
Sure.
I would investigate.
I'm
not telling you I'm going to sign him.
No question.
I would investigate him. I'm telling you, Oklahoma, P. Ryan, look at him in the draft. I love the guy. He is Natron Means. Enough said.
Right. Okay. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks for calling in, Dre. Appreciate it. Andre in Westchester, in Rochester, I'm sorry. He's up next. One from one Dre to another. What's going on, Andre?
Hey, not much, guys.
What's going on?
Just to put in on your emphasis on JPP, you also got to put in the count how many times he was double teamed.
That's true, too.
They double-teamed Cora in the games that he wasn't there.
That's true. Good point.
We told you it's a Rubik's Cube.
Andre, and that's why it's so hard to determine real value there with these guys. It's really, really tough.
And look, remember, here's the other part to this that we haven't even talked about, other than we did say earlier there's a dearth of free agents who can really make an impact. Here's the deal. If one team out there either has a different opinion than you have, or if they've got a dilated opinion that says, we are so desperate to get a guy who can at least do this well,
right,
they are going to jack up his number to such a high degree that nobody else is even going to think about making a matching offer.
And, Andre, just to note, too, Jerry's did say in his postseason press conference that the Giants feasibly financially can re-sign both guys, too. So that is always an option if they can figure out that as well. Now, what's your other point, Andre?
Don't you think if they were going to release him, they would have released him with Victor and Rashad, so the Giants fans ain't so brokenhearted two times?
Release who?
JPP.
Well, JPP's a free agent, so he's a free agent already, so they're not going to have to release him before the free agent deadline. He will be free regardless when we get to March 9th or whatever the date is.
Right.
Okay, and I've been here trying to fix this offensive line, so I was trying to put Q at the left. We got John Jerry playing on left guard. Richburg in the middle. Then I got Bobby Hart playing right guard. And Flowers at left. Right tackle.
I don't like putting Pugh out at left tackle, man. I think Pugh's a guard. I don't think he's going to – look, I think he's fine as an emergency replacement if you get into a tough spot. Pugh just had the best year of his career at left guard. The best year of his career. Why – I'm just so hesitant to move a guy from a spot where you know he's good to a spot where you have no idea how good he's going to play there in the NFL.
I'm going to try to be really nice about this. You just took the same five guys and shuffled them in different spots.
That's correct, yes.
How is that a significant upgrade?
I kept Richburg right there.
Okay, yes, I'm sorry. 4 out of 5. All right, but
I let you guys go.
Okay, thank you. You follow though what I'm saying, John. If you're going to upgrade, you got to really upgrade. I mean, the shell game doesn't really work all that well most of the time. Just saying.
How about middle linebacker?
You know, again, bring in somebody to compete. Don't just give B.J. Goodson the job. I mean, that would be foolish. He hasn't proven that he could do the job at the NFL level yet. Nobody knows. So you have to have competition there. How high do you want to draft a guy? You know, is there somebody else, you know, you want to look at outside? Do you just want to say, okay, the veterans who are here deserve to come back and you got to have Goodson compete with them? There are a lot of different ways you can go. Bottom line for me, John Lowe, is I'm not putting a lot of resources into that competition.
No, I mean, look at how well the defense played last year with the guys you had there. You know, I don't think a huge upgrade there is necessary to maintain a really, really good defense. Look, depending on how your defense is arranged, Paul, and I bet you this is the point you're about to make to me.
Go.
You might need a great middle linebacker. When you have four monsters in front of you on the defensive line.
That's where I was going.
You don't need Luke Kuechly running around there.
That's where I was going.
Right.
That's exactly where I was going. If you keep Hankins and Snacks together, if you're able to do that, do you need Harry Carson playing middle linebacker? Probably don't.
And right. Exactly. Richie in Long Island, he's up next. How you doing, Richie?
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you again.
Good to hear from you. What's up?
All right. Kind of like what PDOT was just talking about is kind of what I wanted to comment on.
Sure.
If we look back on the timeline of Eric Flowers, right, he was drafted to be a right tackle, right, because Will Beatty was on the left side. Will Beatty gets hurt. We then say, okay, well, now you move to the left side. And kind of what you were saying, PDOT, we kind of just handed him the job, right? You didn't have any competition brought in to have him compete for it. You just said, okay, this is your spot. You take it.
There was no choice at that point.
Yep.
He was best suited on the roster to take the spot.
And, by the way, it's been that way the last 2 years.
It has.
Yeah.
It has. And then you never brought in somebody to compete with him. I know left tackles don't grow on trees. I know they're hard to come by. But similar to how Bobby Hart, we saw an improvement in him, he competed with Marshall Newhouse.
Yes.
I think that brought out the better in Hart.
Yeah, I agree.
So, turned out to do so in the second half of the season. I agree with that.
Yeah, so that's why, I mean, don't get me wrong. He's an adult. He's an NFL player. He has to do his own due diligence to get himself better. But what the coaching staff and Jerry Reese and all them could have done to also help him, you know, guide him to get to doing better for himself would have been to bring in, you know, somebody to compete with him. Whether it's, I mean, I get it. The first year it was, you know, what was it, OTAs? All right, you know, it's your spot. But the second year, like this past season, could have brought in somebody else because, you know, who did they bring in? Will Beatty? Will Beatty, that wasn't really any competition, you know. That was just a reserve if anything bad happened.
Well, they had actually looked at a couple of veteran free agents. This was public knowledge. Guys like Okung were brought in to talk, and they didn't sign them. You know, it turned out they were unable to get these guys corralled, and so they were unable to make any adjustments. As it turned out, opening day came upon the team, and they said, well, guess what? He's still the left tackle because we couldn't get anybody else. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you'd like to think this offseason they can do something about that.
Yeah, I would really hope so. I mean, this in free agency, bring in, you know, a veteran to have him compete, you know, if let's say the veteran wins on the left side, you know, you move him, you have him Flowers compete over on the right side with Hart. I think, you know, that'll competition, like you guys always say, you know, just brings out the best in somebody. Another comment that I wanted to say, about Victor Cruz, I understand, you know, it was time to, you know, he weren't going to have him in. But is it still possible, do you think, to talk? Like, I thought they were at least going to, you know, maybe dial back the numbers on his contract, not just release him altogether. But is that still possible to bring him back for a lesser contract?
John, my take on this is that that's probably not going to happen based on even the comments that Cruz has made. He looks like he's moving on. He wants to play somewhere else.
It seems unlikely.
He's closed the door. It
seems unlikely. And usually that's the case in situations like this, too. Very rarely when a guy gets cut, he'll go back to that same team in that same season. It's just a rare thing in the league. It doesn't happen a whole lot.
To say it's impossible would be wrong.
And we're not saying that.
But it's unlikely.
Yeah, I figured that. But, you know, he was a big help throughout all his years, especially, you know, and now just – with the veteran locker room and wide receivers and all that. But one quick thing, just looking forward, this is a very hypothetical, right?
Oh, boy.
Looking back on defensive coordinators, when Spags won the Super Bowl in 2007, right?
Yeah.
He signed an extension, correct?
Okay.
This year, he signed an extension. To correct you,
Spags went on an interview with the Redskins for their head coaching job and decided the better of it and came back to the Giants. And I don't know if there was actually an extension there or he just wound up going on with the contract that he was already
under. Yeah, I'm not sure if there was an extension.
I can't tell you that 100%.
I don't know that.
I just know that he did not, after going on an interview with the Redskins, become the Redskins coach. That's a fact.
Okay. Well, it's another thing that I hear Spags talk about. I've heard it a couple times this past season, that is he would like to be a head coach again. And I think in his mind he would like to try to be a head coach again. My question is, who in the defensive coordinator or defensive coaches would you see step up to be a defensive coordinator as of right now if Spags chose to leave after being offered a head coaching position? Because,
it's a hypothetical.
He has another great season.
That is a hypothetical with a capital H that I'm not even going to waste 2 seconds on. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Richie. Great stuff, buddy.
You know, because for two reasons. A, I'm not going to get into Spags' head and assume he wants to head coach somewhere else. I don't know that. I honestly don't know that. You would think he probably would like another shot at it after St. Louis did not go well. But that's a guess. So, A, I don't know that. B, how do you even look at the Giants' assistants and start saying about who's the next guy when the guy you have just got a top 10 defense on the field and you'd like to believe is going to do it again this year? How do you even think about that?
And when most of the staff just got here last year. I mean, more than half of the linebackers coaches knew, the defensive line coaches knew.
It's way premature. Can't think about that.
It's just a real hard question to answer, no question. Jay in Brooklyn, he's up next. Hi, Jay.
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing well, buddy.
Hey, listen, I love that you guys just talked about Jerry Reese. This is a fascinating offseason.
Yeah.
The decisions that he's going to have to make going forward are going to affect the team all over the place. Now, the problem is, the only one issue you see that's a negative is this is also his own doing in a way. You know, bad drafts, in a way, not to look in the past, but bad drafts have set them up for these hard decisions. Most teams, if you had free agent defensive linemen and you had 2 third-round picks sitting on the sidelines, the decision would be a lot easier. The problem is the guys you got sitting back there, you can't trust worth anything. Bromley and Odighizuwa have shown you nothing.
Jay, I think, like you said, I don't want to, relitigate the past, but I think it is fair to say that you would have hoped, you would have known a lot more about Odighizuwa and Bromley at this point in their careers than probably what they do. I think that's a fair statement.
You had Paul Schwartz on a month ago, and he said he laid out perfectly. In between his bad jokes, he laid it out perfectly.
I love
Wow,
that.
We'll let him know about that.
He laid it, but he said, the replacements for these two guys are not on this team. I mean, if you want to tell me Okwara, maybe he has a future, I agree with you. He showed some spurts. But how in the world could you go into next season trusting Bromley and Odighizuwa to perform at any level?
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And another thing on the offensive line, the closer and closer we get to the draft, the less I think that they're going to go for offensive lineman in the first round. I mean, the idea that you're going to go to Eli and say, hey, listen, you got a couple of years left. We know you have some issues at the offensive tackle. How are we going to help you? We're going to draft a guy with a 23rd pick that's probably a project who needs to be developed, who's probably not going to show anything for a year or two.
Yeah, I think, Jay, I tend to side with you on this as well. The closer I get to the draft and the more I look at the guys that are going to be available, I think the chance they take a tackle in that first round probably isn't great simply based on who's available.
See, the odds of that will be dramatically affected by what happens in free agency, though.
True, that too.
Okay?
Correct.
Because, as you know, Riley Reiff has been at the top of my radar screen for the Giants.
Correct.
As a guy who I would target for that spot. Albert's another guy I would investigate. Let me make sure I use that word
properly.
You know
who else I would look at, too? The Wagner kid from Baltimore.
He's strictly a right tackle, though. Strictly a right tackle. You're not even thinking about putting him on the left side. So for that reason, I'm not as interested in talking to him.
That's fair.
But here's the thing. Jerry Reese thing. I think he hit a grand slam last year with his free agent pickups.
Well, he absolutely did.
And the draft, by the way.
Yeah.
And the draft. But, again, you have three starting top 50 picks on your offensive line. Top 50. Not a lot of teams can say that. And they're still looking for offensive linemen.
Well, you know, though, if they were to sign a veteran free agent tackle, then, as you've indicated, Eli has another lineman he can count on who has experience in this league, who will have produced, and he doesn't have to look around waiting for some kid to develop out of the first round.
I agree. Paul, if it's up to me, I'm telling you, my first three picks, even my first four picks in this draft, are going to the lines, defensive and offensive lines.
The trenches.
Even if they sign JPP and Hankins, both of them, which I doubt, they're probably going to get one, They have no depth along the line. You can't have these guys playing, 95% of the snaps again. It's going to wear them down.
Yeah. I've got no problem with that. And defensive line actually has some depth in this draft. We already know that, John.
Right. And the Giants' defensive line could use some more depth.
Absolutely.
For that matter.
Why not?
Jay, right. I agree with you.
Jay, could you do me a favor? You got to be one of the lead old school callers that we have on this show. You got to get a club together. All right? You got to get a club together of the Big Blue Kickoff Live old school guys. And I need a shovel. If you're going to be a graphics guy about it, I need a shovel for old school digging in the trenches to be part of our logo.
No, actually, you know what it's going to be? Actually, Paul already has a life-size statue of himself on his lawn in front of his house in Jersey. So we'll just move that over to the meeting room, and you guys can all worship before the large Tino statue.
Thank you, Jay.
Guys, it's the first time I'm calling in. I love your show. You guys do a great job, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jay. You know, it's funny.
All right, buddy.
Appreciate it. I thought Jay said it. We do have a Jay in Brooklyn that calls in, but it didn't sound like our other Jay in Brooklyn.
So different guy.
A new Jay in Brooklyn.
Call again.
Yeah, that was a good call. Good stuff, Jay. All right, final call of the show is Sean in California. Sean, how are you? Thanks for holding it. Thanks for getting up early with us.
Hey, no problem, guys. I've been just so busy at work that I haven't been able to call in at 9, but I've been listening every day, and I've been following up.
Great.
I know you guys are trying to go to lunch, but I'll try to make it fast.
no problem.
No, that's Lance, who's always trying to get to the food line.
I've been listening to the show, and, I honestly agree with most of the callers and you guys, and I know our main priority right now is, Jonathan Hankins and JPP. I know we have to adjust free agency before we go into the draft.
Yep.
I'm going to just talk about a little bit about Victor Cruz, make it fast. I wasn't happy that they let him go, but I understood that move. And Rashad Jennings, I think that was a smart move to kind of let him go, which brings me to my next point. Some of y'all might hate me for this, but I want to see us. It's going to be really out there. I'm not trying to be one of those callers that just shouts out things, but I've been doing my research in mock drafts and, the top 25s and the top 10s of each position. And to me, there's a lot of wide receivers in this draft class, so we probably won't have to worry about a tall wide receiver till like round 3 or 4, if not later. Then if you look at offensive tackle, it looks like the majority of the beast mode tackles is going before our pick. I'm not saying we're not going to get a tackle when we look at it, but there's still going to be offensive linemen, but the beast mode guys are going to go before our pick. So which brought me to running back. We just released Jennings. I was taking a look at Dante Freeman out of Texas. This guy is a beast, and it's someone that if you do make your first round pick overall number 23 on this guy, he's someone that could contribute right away into this offense. If you watch his highlight films, he kind of will fit right in with what we're trying to do. He's a big back, but he has speed like Flash. Like, this guy's big. He kind of reminds me of a little bit like Brandon Jacobs, but not so much like Jacobs, but for like our 3-and-1s, he can get it. I mean, you watch his highlights, it's like 1st and 15, and this guy's pulling off a 20-yard run, and him and Paul Perkins in the back, and then just build the offensive line after that, and then hopefully we can fix our defensive line before the draft. I think that overall that would be my pick. I'm not no Jerry Reese, I'm not even close, but
neither are we.
Dante Freeman, the kid's beast.
Look, here's what I want to just – I want to try to say one thing really nicely about this, because it doesn't matter if your offensive line is not fixed up to the standards that it needs to be, who your running backs are going to be. And I think that Freeman's a legit prospect. I think you're right. He's really good. He's going to do a lot of good things in this league. He's got power. He's got some size. I think it translates well to the NFL level. I agree with that.
But,
here's the problem.
I saw it coming.
Because as you just said to me, well, let's get this guy and then worry about fixing on the offensive line later. That's the mentality that's going to wind up doing you more harm than good.
Well, I'm going to say this, too. And Sean, thanks a lot for the call. The show's going to wrap up. We got to run. I don't care even if you do fix your offensive line problem in free agency. I would not select a running back with the first-round pick.
You're going to be able to get guys, especially the power guys, later on in the draft.
And I think there's an outside chance Freeman's there in the second round. There's a shot. There's a shot.
Possibly. Remember, most running backs now are being devalued the last few years of the draft.
Here's the thing. If I'm picking a running back in the first round, I sure as hell am giving him 18 to 25 carries a game. And I'm still using Shane Vereen. So then what the hell are you doing with Paul Perkins?
And I'm also telling that back, whoever he is, that the line's already made. Much like what the Cowboys did with Ezekiel Elliott.
And you know what? It's
easy
funny
for them to take Elliott because they know they got a brick wall in front of them.
And here's the thing. And I think you hit it right on the head. And I've seen these mock drafts having, like, the Browns take Leonard Fournette or the Jets taking Dalvin Cook. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, guys, why would you put a great running back behind the bad line? Look what happened to Todd Gurley last year. Do you think Todd Gurley became bad all of a sudden? No.
He became black and blue is what
he
became.
He's got no one blocking for him. The perfect teams to pick running backs are the teams that are ready for them. You know who makes a lot of sense to pick the running back? You're right, the Dallas Cowboys. Do you know who else it makes a ton of sense to pick a running back? The Oakland Raiders. Why do you think the Tennessee Titans went and picked Derrick Henry last year? Now, it turned out DeMarco Murray was fantastic. They didn't need the kid. Mm-hmm. But it's the teams that already have some balance on offense, have a good line,
yep,
that can use the running back. You know what will be a great team to pick a running back this year, in my opinion? The Green Bay Packers. They have a good offensive line, a good passing game. You pick that running back to complement what you already have.
You know, years ago when the Jets took Blair Thomas out of Penn State, I remember being very critical in the media of that pick, and all the Jets fans in New York just wanted to destroy me for that. And I told them, what do you think he's going to do with that offensive line? By the time you get that fixed and this team has the balance and has the blocking to allow a running back to do his stuff, Blair Thomas will be broken into about 15 billion pieces.
And what happened?
It's exactly what happened.
And by the way, my bigger issue with this, too, and I said, even if I did fix the offensive line, and again, I don't think it's a radical reconstructive surgery. I think if you make the appropriate additions to make the offensive line better, I like Paul Perkins a lot. Why do I want to take him out of the equation? Because I'm telling you, if I'm picking a running back in the first round, he's getting 350 touches. Okay? And I do not want to – and you're still going to use a Ream because he's a great receiver. So that means Paul Perkins isn't going to play.
Yeah.
Why would I take a young guy on my roster that I think is pretty darn good? And look, maybe I'm overboard on the Paul Perkins bandwagon, but I've committed. I'm on it now. So I'm staying on. All right?
Good for you, John.
I don't want to take this guy off the field next year. And if I'm picking a running back in the first round, Perkins is getting 5 touches a game. Maybe. Why would I want to do that when I think he's going to be a good running back in this league? Is he not? Is he maybe he's not going to be, you know, Ezekiel Elliott or LaDainian Tomlinson or, you know, something like that? Fine. But you don't need that. You don't need that.
A complimentary power back for short yardage and goal line is what you need.
Which is middle round.
Get him third, fourth, fifth. Jacobs was a later round pick. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of guy you need. Enough said.
Thank you for joining us. Great job on the phones. This is a fun show.
It was.
We had some really good calls.
We agreed a lot more today than we usually do. He is rubbing off on me, folks. He doesn't want to admit it, but the other way around.
No, I'm rubbing off on you. You're absolutely right.
I'm getting old. Yourself. Real old.
Well, you know why? Because we didn't really talk about the stuff. Because we didn't really talk much about the tight end today, which is something we disagree on a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
But we've always been on the same page on the offensive line.
Trenches, baby.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Me and Feagles. Big Blue Kickoff. Have a great night, everyone.